You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby G and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont. And what's going on?
And we have a very special guest tonight we can't wait to bring on. Who's joining us?
Ann Hillerman. We're so happy to have Ann with us tonight.
We're delighted to have Ann. She's kind of like a neighbor.
Almost.
Sort of. The first time we met her was she came to Albuquerque and she was introducing at that time her book Cave of Bones.
That's right.
That's the Broadway Theater, right? Yes. And then we met her in Santa Fe earlier this year to talk about the book we're gonna talk about tonight. Lost Bird. Yeah, so she feels kind of like, you know, a neighbor. Where are you joining us from, Ann?
Well, tonight I'm at my house in Tucson.
I've been here for about
3 weeks, and I'm going back to New Mexico right after Christmas to connect again with my old friends and soak up some of that beautiful ambiance and get some good green chili and some tamales.
Yes. Well, this time of year, we like to call ourselves
the jingle bells.
Yes, the jingle bells. We can only, this may be the last week we can actually do that. So, Anne, do you have a favorite holiday movie or cookie that you enjoy?
Oh, yeah. I just made some cookies. They call them fruitcake cookies, but I'm not big on fruitcake. So I kind of, like I do with my writing, I sort of adjusted the recipe and put in some different ingredients. Mm-hmm. And so instead of the candied cherries, they had dried apricots and figs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were really good. And I gave them to my friends and I saved a bunch and I've been eating them for breakfast. Really good. I'm going to make that recipe again next year.
Yeah. It is always fun. This time of year brings out favorite things like that and traditions. Well, before we get started, Jim has a little bio.
We have it here someplace.
He's going to read about you, Anne, and then we're going to get into this book.
Anne Hillerman is the author of the best-selling Leghorn Chi Manuelito series. She started a career in journalism and nonfiction books, then plunged into fiction following the death of her father, Tony Hillerman, who began the series in the 1970s. Her 10th mystery, the 28th book in this popular series, will be published this spring. Anne has won numerous awards for her books, including the Will Rogers Medallion, the Frank Waters Award, the Spur Award from the Western Writers of America, and the New Mexico Arizona Book Award. She's a strong supporter of public libraries and independent bookstores. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to our conversation tonight.
Oh, we are too. And we're excited. We already know you're going to join us next year. So whatever we don't get covered tonight, we can cover in May. So just to kind of get us started a little bit, tell us about your early career and maybe a little bit about being a journalist.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Mm-hmm. I started as a journalist actually in high school. I was the correspondent for the Albuquerque Journal for my high school. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the University of New Mexico, got a degree in journalism. Right after that, it took me a little longer than usual. So I graduated, instead of graduating in the spring, I graduated in January. And it was lucky for me because that was right when the New Mexico legislature was starting. So my first job was as a legislative, kind of a legislative intern, assistant, but I really, really loved it. And then I got a job at the Santa Fe New Mexican, and I worked at the Albuquerque Journal. And all of that time, I never thought that I would switch into fiction. And meanwhile, my dad, Tony Hillerman, also had started as a journalist. So, and he had been happy as a journalist. And then, as you all know, he eventually switched to writing mysteries. So I was a journalist for a long, long time until my dad died. And then I loved his stories and I loved his characters. Yeah. And it just seemed to me it was a shame for the stories to have to end, you know, even though my dad wasn't around to write them. So that was kind of how I switched from journalism to fiction. But I learned so much in journalism. I learned how to listen. And I think that really helped me when it came to writing dialogue. And I learned how to ask questions. And I learned how to work with editors, which is, but that's important for anybody who wants to be a professional writer. So when I decided to hang up my journalism spurs and move into writing fiction, all of that background really did come in handy. So I'm grateful for it.
Yeah,
I bet. You must have did a lot of interviews, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Anybody in particular stand out in your mind that you interviewed? Good, bad, or indifferent?
Oh, well, Bruce King. I mean, he was just the classic interviewer because he was so charming and so personable. And he had such creative use of language that sometimes he would say things and I'd think, oh, that's not really the right word. But we all quoted him exactly. Okay. And people loved it. It was that kind of down home, you know, yeah. I'm a cowboy and but I'm really smart. I'm smart and a cowboy, and I'm just like all you voters. So, yeah, those were some of my favorite interviews. I did a lot of arts writing, a lot of I did book reviews. I interviewed Michael McGarrity when he was first starting his career. Yeah, I don't know so many of them. It was really really a gift to have a chance to meet so many interesting people.
And I wonder, since from what little I know about journalism, you have to meet that deadline. I mean, there's no, oh gosh, you know, I have writer's block or I've written myself in a corner or whatever. I would imagine you learned a skill about how to meet a deadline. Yes.
Yes, that's right. And I think the other thing that I learned from journalism was that there can be a lot of teamwork involved in writing. I think many people, when they first start their careers, they think it's just me out here on my little island. But in journalism, you know, that you have lots of support and lots of people who either help you with your writing or give you criticism that you don't want. But all of that, I think, kind of toughens you up if you're going to be a professional writer. You can't be too... You can't think your words are too precious. You have to be really open to criticism. And That's at the good. Same time, you have to kind of know what it is that you want to say and know when it's time to stand your ground. So I think all of that experience that I had in journalism really helped me later.
Mm-hmm. So those were all steps that helped you transition into writing novels, I would imagine. But when you sat down to write the first one, were there some challenges you hadn't expected that, you know, that first one out?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if I, you know, I think hindsight is always 20/20. If I had it to do over again, when I was in college, I would have taken some classes on how to write fiction, you know, how to develop characters, all of those things. But luckily, between my journalism career and my fiction career, I wrote some long nonfiction books. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book about Santa Fe Gardens. My late husband and I did a book about beautiful places on the Navajo Nation that my dad had written about. And so all of that experience kind of helped me learn how to switch from writing 500 words to writing 500 pages. You know, it was a big change. Yeah. So when it came time to write my first novel, I wasn't as intimidated as I would have been otherwise with the idea of writing a 250 page book.
Yeah.
But the thing that really intimidated me was the idea that my dad had so many fans who loved those characters as much as I did. And some of them probably knew more about them than I did. Oh, I thought, holy smokes, I can't, if I get this wrong, not only will whoever's reading this book not finish it, but then they'll tell all of their friends who were my dad's fans, don't bother reading this.
Yeah. You know, this is, so.
What did you get anybody complaining? Well, he wouldn't have, Tony wouldn't have done that. Why did you do that?
Right. Right.
So do you outline or do you just have the idea and it just flows through your fingers? Tell us about your process a little bit.
I think I don't do outlines, but I do try to start with a basic idea of what will the crime be. Setting is really important to me. All of my books are set at least in part on the Navajo Nation. So before I start, I try to go to the place I'm writing about and kind of soak up the ambiance. Because I'm juggling three characters, Jim Chi, Joe Leaphorn, and Bernadette Manuelito, I need to decide who is going to be the main protagonist in this book. And then what kind of jobs will the other characters have? Let's see. I guess that's about where I start. And then I know that I have to start with, I need to start with a bang. So I try to think, what can I write in this first chapter that will really get people's attention? So they'll want to read chapter 2 and chapter 15 and chapter 38. So they'll be with me through the whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's kind of where I start. And then I just try to, once I'm going on a book, I really try to write every day so I don't lose my place.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular time of the day or just when you feel like it or late at night or
mornings work really best for me. I find usually after about 4 or 5 o'clock, I may still be awake, but my brain is not as bright as I would like it to be. So I try to, I usually do some good writing in the morning. And then if I've got some research to do or some editing or phone calls or something, I might do that in the afternoon. And then once I'm done with the first draft, then I can work more hours because then I have the box in which the story is. And then it's a little easier than the first draft is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How challenging is it to keep a series alive for you as the writer, knowing that you want to also, we're partnered. You're partnered with the readers. Our readers trust our author and they follow along. So it is a two-way communication. But is it challenging to kind of go like, what am I gonna have them do now? And how am I going to develop? Do they need to be developed more to keep you, the writer, interested in them? Just what are the challenges that keep a series going?
You know, I think they're basically the same challenges that anybody would face writing a mystery or a romance or even mainstream fiction. You know, like you're saying, you do need to think of, you know, what can I do with these characters to kind of bring out their strongest points and bring out their challenges? So, you know, that's one thing that's in my mind. And what did I do last time? So or what have I done in these other books that I don't want to do now because I don't want to repeat myself.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Let's see. And I mean, for me, a special challenge because my dad gave me the gift of three characters, trying to think of what I can have each one do that will engage them, but making one person basically the star, the person who drives the story, and then figuring out how can there be a story in which these other characters will also play a part. And I think in Lost Birds, I had not written about Joe Leaphorn for a while. I know we're going to talk about this later, but Joe has always been a difficult character for me. And so it was really enjoyable in Lost Birds to kind of bring Joe back as a strong crime solver and then have him also work. My dad set him up as a mentor to both Joe, Jim Chi, and to Bernie. And so to have him fulfill those roles.
Yeah.
But you know, when I start, I'm never exactly sure how it's all going to work out. And sometimes after I finish the first draft, then I look at it and think, oh yeah, I need to have a little more Jim Chi in here, or a little less Bernie or something. So then I might adjust their roles a little bit.
Right.
Well, you know, Joe Leapoint, he's a complex character. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in his head all the time, you know. And sometimes, you know, I think the poor guy is, you know, he's really serious. He doesn't laugh enough because he's got too many things he has to get involved in.
He's a good listener.
Yeah, he is. Really, but he's a great listener. Guy, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, he is.
You know, and I thought maybe that, I thought that character on Zahn on the Dark Winds, I thought, to me, we haven't not read all your books, but I thought maybe... To me, he seems like he's captured the essence of Joe Leapoint. You think? Would you buy that, or are you not so sure?
I would buy that. I've been really impressed with his with his performances, and also with Jessica Matten and Kaiwa Gordon, the Bernadette Manuelito and the Jim Chi character.
Okay.
I think in the first season, Dark Winds portrayed Jim Chi as really different than he was in Dad's books. Jim, it was an outsider. He was more acculturated than he is in Dad's books. Okay. The Dark Winds people even had him working undercover for the FBI.
Yeah.
I mean, which my dad never would have had Jim Chi working for the FBI. But
yeah.
Movies are different. Television is different than books. And I think... besides all of those details, in the end, they captured the heart of the characters. You know, they're good people trying to do the best they can, you know, in a world that's full of complications. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really like this series. I'm really proud of the way the actors and the script writers have brought the characters to life, and the third season is coming up, and I'm excited about that.
Well, that's good. You know, it's not always true, but I think it's great when it happens. So that's super.
And do you, will any of your characters be making an appearance in season three?
I don't think so. It seems to me I haven't seen any of the previews of it, but from the way they've been promoting it, it seems like it's going to be based on, or I should say inspired by, two of Dad's books. One is Dance Hall of the Dead, and the other is Sinister Pig. Okay. And it's going to be interesting to see how they bring those stories together. I mean, Dance Hall of the Dead was a Joe Leapoint only book that was set at Zuni Pueblo. Mm-hmm. And Sinister Pig is a book where Bernadette Manuelito gets in a lot of trouble. And in Dad's book, certainly she's very different than the strong Bernie in my books and the strong Bernie who's in the Dark Winds. So I'm very curious to see how this season
that's
is going.
Great. Yeah, that's fun. You know, landscape is, you know, plays a big picture in your books, particularly the one we're reading now. It's almost like a spiritual thing. Would you care to comment on the landscape at all?
Oh, and you write landscape so beautifully, but yeah.
Well, you know, it was a specific place on the Navajo Nation that inspired that book. I've spent a lot of time driving roads on the Navajo Nation, and there are two sandstone buttes. They're on the cover of that book, in fact, called Elephant Feet. And I had driven by there so many times and seen those. And almost every time I've driven by, there are people there taking pictures of themselves, of their kids, of their dogs, whatever, in front of those two buttes. And so that was the landscape that really was, I guess, the tiniest, tiny seed that inspired me with the story in Lost Birds. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in Sacred Bridge, it was the beautiful landscape of Lake Powell and the Rainbow Bridge, which used to be accessible by water and now you have to hike to. In most of my books, there's been some beautiful facet of the landscape that's inspired them. In Rock with Wings, it was both Shiprock and the landscape of Monument Valley. So yeah, landscape. I feel so lucky that my dad, when he started this series, was also inspired by the Navajo Nation and set his stories there. It has made it so really such a labor of love for me to use part of that beautiful scenery as the background. And as you said, almost as a character in my books. Yeah.
Well, and I think for us as readers, your characters describe, sometimes we're seeing the character, the landscape through Joe Leaphorn's eyes as he's driving and he's talking to us in a way. It's not first person, but we're experiencing it through sometimes the characters. And I always feel we have still yet to explore this landscape we live in. But I feel when I'm reading your books, Anne, that I'm surrounded by that landscape, that I am in that landscape from the beautiful way that you describe it for us. Yeah.
Oh, really. Well, thank you for that. That good compliment. I have to say, one thing I have really enjoyed about Dark Winds was particularly for the first series, all of those beautiful shots of Monument Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used Monument Valley so many times in my books. Dad only referred to it, but he never actually said a story there. So I was so pleased to see the Dark Winds people pick up on that.
That's great. That's great. We're going to step away for a moment. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking still more about Lost Birds. But Rendezvous with a Writer is thrilled to be working alongside sponsors Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And if you are a writer, find out what our friends Krista Sukup of Blue Cottage Agency and Janelle Madison of Clicks by Madison can do for you. And we're going to hear a little bit about Blue Agency and Clicks by Madison, and then we'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest Anne Hellerman, and we're talking about Lost Birds.
Oh, it's a great book.
Anne, what inspired the storyline here? Lost Birds.
When I had finished the book before this, Way of the Bear, and I was thinking, oh, what shall I write next? And about the time that I was pondering this, there was a lot of news in the newspaper and on television about the Native Child Welfare Act, the act that required Native children to be adopted by Native parents or by someone who was in their tribal community. And the act was a big deal because before that, these Native kids could be adopted by anybody. And that's where the term lost bird comes from, actually. It was a poor child who was part of the Battle of Little Bighorn. And she was found under her dead mother's body. And then she was adopted by one of the army people who had been involved in the battle. And then anyway, his wife, who was actually a suffragette, took over raising this child because he abandoned both of them. And that poor girl had a terrible life. And they called her her native name translated into something that meant lost bird. And so that word then came to be used for Native children who were adopted outside of their culture, who lost their language, who lost their tribal connections. But there are many, many stories of these children ultimately being reconnected with their tribal communities. So anyway, there was a family who had fostered a Native child. They wanted to adopt her. The judge said, no, this you can't because of the Indian Child Welfare Act. And so they sued. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upheld the law that said Native children should be retained by their tribal families. And the other reason I think this story appealed to me is that I'm the oldest of six children, but all my five siblings were adopted. And I have cousins who were adopted. My mom had an adopted sister. So adopted was a huge part of my own, adoption was a huge part of my own family. So I thought it would be, if there were a lost bird who'd been adopted before the act, and now she wants to find her native family, and she thinks that she might be Navajo, who better to talk to than Joe Leaphorn, who knows everybody on the Navajo Nation practically. So that was the start of Lost Birds.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And there are some other powerful themes that you bring up that, again, you definitely weave into the story. And they are also sort of in the headlines these days, finally getting some recognition. Missing and murdered Indigenous women being one of the just horrible things, but finally getting some press and getting some recognition. Do you want to just chat about that for a moment?
Oh, sure. There was one of my characters, Darlene Manuelito, has great talent as an artist. So I was able to shine a little light on that by having her help do posters that had pictures of these women. So people who might have seen them, might have heard their stories, could then help the law enforcement find them and bring them home. It's a huge problem throughout Indian country. And Albuquerque is actually one of the places where a lot of these women have been discovered. So and the same is true in Arizona. It's been on my mind a lot. I've used that theme in several books, and a variation of that comes up in the book that I just finished. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I thought you did a wonderful job of weaving those two stories into the plot of the book. So it's a subtly the way you worked it in, but we all got the message that there's an opportunity here.
I think she's the master weaver, actually.
Yeah.
I wish. I'm so enamored of people who can do that. And I have to say, I've learned a lot about weaving. And the more I learn, the more I just think how so many of these weavers hold the whole idea, the piece in their brain as they're doing it line by line by line for months and months and months. I mean, I can barely remember my grocery list. It's like, how do these do this? It's like a real kind of creative genius that inspires me a lot.
Mm-hmm. One of the, of course, one of the major characters, Stella Brown, and we mentioned her a moment ago because she hires Leaphorn to help her find her birth family. She's hoping to find her real birth family. But I, as a reader in meeting her and kind of hearing her story, I thought to myself, well, why doesn't she just get a DNA test? And of course, Joe Leaphorn says the same thing to her.
Same thing, yeah.
And it was very interesting what her response was. Why does Stella really not want anything to do with DNA testing? It's very interesting. Why not?
There is a lot of very deep suspicion in Indian country throughout the United States about healthcare. Part of it, I think, has to do with forced sterilization, that Indian women were unexpectedly sterilized when they had their babies in hospitals. And some of it has to do with the deeply ingrained belief that the Navajo people are on land that the holy people gave them. And that if DNA says you're actually connected to somebody in Asia, that could create a real spiritual conflict. So I think those two things kind of factor in together. Yeah. Now, of course, there are Navajo people who are geneticists who work at Los Alamos National Laboratory. I mean, I don't mean to in any way say that there are Navajo people who don't believe in science, but I think this is kind of something like like the story of Genesis, where you would have people say, "Well, gee, you know, how did we really did we really evolve, or was I born from Adam's rib?" I mean, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of lot of complications in what people believe. And so that was a complication that I was able to use, I think, to kind of enrich the story. Because, I mean, if Stella had had a DNA test, I wouldn't have had much to write about.
I know. But it was an interesting, it kind of made me stop and think. We haven't done DNA testing ourselves. I'm not the least bit interested, but I hadn't really heard anyone speak about reasons why one might not want to. So I, as a reader, you know, it really enjoyed the time she had a couple of conversations with Leaporn about that.
Thing about it also, there is a problem with people who've been adopted who have DNA tests, and then they find their biological family, and it turns out that some of those people put them up for adoption for good reason, that they really weren't particularly meant to be parents. And so then this person finds herself maybe dealing with an alcoholic mother, or, you know, all kinds of things that maybe you would have just assumed known about. So, I mean, there's really two sides to every story.
Of course. Right. Of course. We were talking about research and what kind of research you maybe needed to do for this book. And I think research can be a bit like going down a rabbit hole, right? When do you know I'm done? Enough is enough.
That's a lovely question, and it's really hard to know. And usually I do too much research, and then I think, oh my gosh, I'm not, say for my book Cave of Bones, that part of that book unfolds at the Malpais, a big lava flow. So I did so much research on lava. And eventually I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not writing a book about volcanoes and lava. I'm writing a mystery. I better get on with it. So, and then I said that to somebody at one of my author talks, and she said, well, honey, you should just take all of that research and write a book for kids about volcanoes. So maybe someday I will do that.
Nonfiction, right, exactly, because you know all that.
But I think the other thing that helps is when you have a deadline. So you think, oh gosh, I have to turn this book in 2 months, and I better get on with it. So,
One of the things that was interesting too, and we see it, of course, in Dark Winds as well, but oftentimes Navajo characters, when they meet each other, they take time to go through family heritage, family clan history. Yeah. For those of us and that are still learning about that, can you briefly tell us sort of what is a clan? And then when somebody says my clan sister or my clan brother, is that like a cousin? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, a clan is like an extended family.
Yeah.
And most of the Navajo culture traditionally is matrilineal. So the most important clans are your mother's, and then your grandmother's, and then your father's mother, and then your father's father. And so if I were introducing myself, those four clans would be probably the main ones. And then one of the reasons that this was traditionally done is that you're not supposed to marry anybody who's related to you. And so that was kind of good, you know, good advice. Say if you're at a big shindig and you find a guy who, you know, is pretty good looking, and you ask him what his clans are, then you know right away, is he eligible or not?
Yeah,
if you're following the traditional.
Sure.
You know, the only other place I heard of clans were the Scottish people. You know, they have a lot of clans, but I haven't heard that term used necessarily very many groups.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, as readers, we like to learn things.
For a lot of native groups, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take one more step away. And with the holiday season still in full swing, one of our sponsors is Out West Shop, and that's us. And outwestshop.com is your destination for great gifts. And write this down. Use coupon code GIFTS with an S and save $25 off a purchase of $100 or more. And we come back from this short ad. There's going to be more with Ann Hillerman, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
And we're back.
Welcome back to Ronnie River Writer with special guest Ann Hillerman in our book, Lost Birds. A great book, by the way. Ann, let's talk about characters a minute. We know you got total control on these folks, but do they ever surprise you?
Oh, yeah, all the time, all the time. So what, one thing, when I was working on Lost Birds, I thought, gee, there's this Louisa Bourbonnais character, and I haven't really done much with her. So let's see, maybe there should be something going on with her. So I'm thinking, yeah, I'll let her have a visitor. But maybe she has a son. So, I mean, I just started with that. I had no idea who that character was going to be. Right. But as it turned out, he had quite an interesting story to tell me. And that story kind of morphed into kind of a whole other definition of Lost Birds. I mean, he's a young man with more problems than I would have expected when I first started to write about him.
Okay.
But it really kept my interest up to have a new character and have him kind of unfolding himself to me as the process of writing went forward. So that was sure one surprise. And the other surprise there, Joe Leaporn has a friend, another old law enforcement guy, Navajo cop, Captain Largo. And in one of my earlier books, Captain Largo had retired, and I hadn't really used him much. But as the story developed, Joe Leaporn needed a friend. And he needed some help on this case. And so I thought, well, here's Captain Largo. Maybe I'll put him in the story, you know, give him a bigger role. And again, it was really fun to see him in a different role and to write more about the relationship between him and Leaporn, and to see these guys who I really hadn't used much as active law enforcement people, as active crime solvers, kind of get them out of retirement and, you know, give them a real job.
Well, there is a scene, no spoiler alert, but readers, you want to get this book for no other reason. This one scene that you won't be able to breathe. And it is Leaporn and Largo, and they are together in Largo's truck, and they're out looking for the son, for Corey, Louisa's son. And oh my goodness, Miss Ann, did you take us on a ride? These two guys, and they are barreling left and right and looking for dead ends, and they feel like, you know, time is not on their side. And I don't know if it was 12 pages or 15 pages. I don't know how many pages, but I did not breathe once I understood what we were up against and the risks involved. And I did not breathe until you brought us out of that adventure. And I thought, oh, what a wild ride, and how wonderful that Largo was along for that ride, because that made it, you know, it could have just been Joe, but having the two of them was fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you. I have to give my husband really some good credit for that. I had written that scene, and he's a wonderful editor, and he read it, and he had some interesting comments, things that I hadn't thought of. And so then I rewrote it, and then he read it again, and I mean, he really was a big help. He's an avid reader of thrillers and mysteries. And I think all what he had learned from, you know, really reading the experts, he was able to kind of share with me to help me to move the action forward and keep building the suspense. So, thank you. I was really proud of that scene. Yeah, it was really, really worth it.
You could see it cinematically. Yeah. I mean, I really felt like I am in that truck with them, but I'm also, I can see it happening. And that's just how the beauty of how that was written, that scene was written. Okay,
yeah,
honey, jump right in there.
Jump
right
in
there. I know you have.
That was a good scene. It was. Well, we thought we asked about a couple of these other characters. Some of them are really important. Some are not quite as important. And some are kind of funny, actually. I want to ask about Big Rex and the Hop Toads. And that band, how did you come up with that name?
I don't know. You know, sometimes they just come to me. And I have to say, I have a lot of fun coming up with the names. And sometimes after I've got the first draft done, I'll look at those names and I'll think, oh no, I have Ralph and Randy and Ron and Roger, and I have to stick them all out. But Hop Toads, it just came to me. I don't know. But I thought, I mean, I wanted a little lightness, because it, the character that involves kind of has a hard life. And I thought, gee, you know, she's trying to make it as a singer, and it would be good for her to, you know, be with a band that had some joy in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Who else you want to ask about? Ask another one.
This Cecil character, he's like a throwback from the old days, wherever the old days were. You know?
Bowlegs. I mean, what a great name, Bowlegs. Is it Cecil or Cecil? How do you say his name? It is Cecil. Okay.
I just call him Bowlegs.
Bowlegs.
Yeah.
Legs.
Yeah. Well, you know, my dad created that character in Dance Hall of the Dead. And I just thought, I love that name. So before I wrote about him, I did a little research, and it turned out that Bowlegs is a very popular and cherished name in Oklahoma. You know, Oklahoma is, that was where my dad was born and where he grew up. And Oklahoma is full of Native people from all over, because it was kind of a dumping ground when people were taken from their original land and moved someplace that the government thought wasn't worth anything. So anyway, there were lots of Bowlegs who I think my dad grew up with when he was growing up in rural Oklahoma. So anyway, that was where that name came from. But in Dance Hall of the Dead, Cecil has a hard life, and Joe Leaphorn really is kind to him. So I thought it would be interesting to see how he turned out, you know, how he grew up, what happened to him. So it was fun for me to kind of take that character and, you know, move him ahead 40 years and, you know, see who he was and who did he marry, and, you know, who are his friends. I'm sorry, we're having
That's okay. That's like what the characters do to get your attention, right?
Yeah. And sometimes you have to do that to keep the thing going, you know? More excitement.
Now, I liked Mrs. Drinkwater.
If anybody was dozing off, that
guy. Darkwater. I liked Mrs. Darkwater.
Darkwater.
I liked Mrs. Darkwater. Just tell us a little bit about her.
Well, Mrs. Darkwater is a good friend and a neighbor of Bernie and Darlene's mama. And she and Mama, they have a really nice, almost sisterly relationship. But Mrs. Darkwater is a little younger and a little more with it than Mama. So she also kind of helps the two daughters when they have questions. You know, they can talk to Mrs. Darkwater. And in one of my earlier books, Mrs. Darkwater has had a dog. And my Bernie she's a very brave woman, but she doesn't like dogs. She had a bad experience with dogs. So she's kind of makes peace with this dog, but she's never really liked it. And then the dog does something really wonderful for Mrs. Darkwater. And so after that, Bernie makes peace with the dog, and Bernie's sister then really takes care of that dog. So Mrs. Darkwater is, again, a character. I invented Bernie's mom, and then I thought, well, she has to have some kind of a backstory, so then I invented Mrs. Darkwater.
Sure.
It worked out really well.
We have time for one more character.
It has to be Bethany.
Bethany.
We talk about this free spirit. Yeah.
Bethany.
You know somebody like her?
Well, yeah, I do, actually. But maybe not exactly like her, but like her enough that, you know, growing up in Santa Fe, which I did, you run into a lot of free spirits, you know, people who aren't afraid of reinventing themselves and trying something new and, you know, seeing different facets of their personality. So, I enjoyed writing about Bethany.
I bet you did, because she disappears. You know, nobody knows where she is. And she's like, what? What's the problem?
We're going to take one more break just to show people and one of the places your books are available. So let's take a listen to Out West Shop, bookshop.org affiliate spot where you can get all of Ann's books. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Ann Hellerman. And... Lost birds.
So go ahead and add. So we're kind of wrapping up, yep. And I can't believe how fast our time went together.
Oh, I know.
We have to, so we have to ask, what's next?
What's next?
Well, I'm doing the last corrections on the book. It'll be number 10 in the series. It's called Shadow of the Solstice. Mm-hmm. And it's a really different kind of book for me. I've taken a character that I hadn't really... Darlene Mammolito, Bernie's sister, plays a big role in this book. Mm, okay. And I hadn't really intended for it to happen that way. But as it turns out, Darlene gets to be a hero in this book. Okay. And she does really well. I have to say, I'm proud of her. There are two main stories in this book. One of them has to do with a huge, awful scandal where indigenous people were basically kidnapped and taken to fake rehab centers in Phoenix. Yeah. The people behind this scheme were able to get Medicaid money that was supposed to go for addiction treatment, but these people were basically just exploited and then abandoned. Mm-hmm. And the Navajo Nation came up with a project called Operation Rainbow Bridge, where they were able to bring a lot of these people home. And so that was the inspiration for one of the stories in this book. And the other story has to do with the natural resources on the Navajo Nation, with oil and uranium and natural gas, and a group that thinks maybe extracting that is not the best thing that could have ever happened. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give anything away. But I'm really happy with this book. And it'll be out the end of April. And I'm going to be doing events in New Mexico and Arizona and elsewhere. And I hope people who like my books will come and listen to me talk and ask me some questions just like you guys have had.
That's wonderful.
We hope they will too. Yeah.
And where can people find you and follow you?
I have a website, ann@annhillerman.com. And I'm also on Facebook, Ann Hillerman Author. And I also have videos that my media person has done, and also some other videos that are on YouTube.
Wonderful.
So, and wonderful. Everywhere.
Well, Jim, do you have a quote?
We have a quote. And actually, this is about Stella. You know, Stella, who actually is one of our lost birds here. Mm-hmm. Stella Brown's thoughts on hiring Joe Leaphorn to find her birth parents. Hiring Joe Leaphorn was a step towards taking charge of her own life. Maybe she wasn't Navajo, but her easy comfort on Navajo land surprised her. She loved the dominance of the vast blue sky and the stunningly dark contrast with the red sandstone cliffs. And especially, she loved being with people who looked more like her than her parents.
Such great writing, Ann.
Thank you.
Next week is our last show for 2024. We can't believe it. And we have Jane Coletti Perry will be with us for the first part of the show with her book, Lila's Journey. And then our good friend J.R. Sanders will be the second part of the show with his new mystery, A Killing Way, part of his Nate Ross novel series. And we have known J.R. for years and absolutely love him. We were so happy we were able to get him in. And we just thank you. Thank you, Anne, for
thank you so
with
much,
us
Anne.
Tonight. And
thank you to Sam.
Thank you to all of you that follow along. This is episode 115. Find it on Facebook. It'll be streaming up on Podbean later tonight. And we just, Anne, thank you, thank you, and happy holidays to you.
Same to you. It was just such a pleasure to spend time with you.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Well,
and what we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you down the trail.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.